The headlines: tensions flare up as Israeli forces break into Al-Aqsa Mosque and make way for extremist Jewish settlers to enter the holy site. A report says the United States has provided intelligence that helped Ukrainian armed forces kill several Russian generals. And also, severe storms and tornadoes sweep across the U.S. state of Oklahoma, causing widespread damage. Our top story for this half hour: Israeli forces have attacked Palestinians at Al-Aqsa Mosque to make way for settlers to enter the holy site in occupied Al-Quds City. A number of Palestinians were injured as Israeli forces used rubber bullets, tear gas, and sound bombs. A spokesman for Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has hailed as a heroic act the steadfastness of the Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa. Hazem Qasem said the holy site was and will remain Islamic, Arab, and Palestinian. The Israeli attack comes despite warnings by Palestinian resistance groups to stop storming the mosque. Hamas on Wednesday held the Tel Aviv regime responsible for any ensuing escalation. It stressed that Israel won't achieve its malicious goals to divide Al-Aqsa and Judaize Muslims' holy sites. In recent weeks, the regime has intensified its violent attacks on Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa. Mona Candil is joining us now from Ramallah. Mona, welcome to the program. The Israeli aggression against worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque continues. Bring us up to speed on the recent escalation there.
Well, since yesterday, Israeli authorities declared that settlers starting from today, Thursday, can again start raiding the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex and Al-Hiram al-Sharif in order to celebrate what Palestinians know and the world knows as the Nakba, the catastrophe of the Palestinians, the occupation of Palestinians in 1948. Israel celebrated as the declaration or the establishment of the so-called Israel. Israeli settlers raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex this morning under the protection of Israeli forces, of course, while hundreds of Palestinian Muslim worshippers were inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque and its complex in order to prevent this raid by the settlers. However, they were locked down in the Qibli Mosque and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, as well as the complex of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And Israeli forces opened rubber-coated bullets towards them and also fired the stun grenades and tear gas canisters in order to force them out of the Muslim holy site and allow the settlers to enter. This is something that is very provocative and considered as desecration of the Muslim holy site, is that we are receiving now settlers held and raised the Israeli flag inside the complex of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. There were warnings, as you have said, from several Palestinian resistance groups, and mainly from the Hamas movement yesterday, said that they will not remain silent, and they warned the Israeli regime that another raid to the Al-Aqsa Mosque by the settlers and raising the Israeli flag would be as a declaration of war, would be dragging the region to another war, and Palestinians will not remain silent, of course.
And one last question before we leave you, Mona. How do Palestinians feel about the international silence in the face of the Israeli aggressions and the desecration of the holy Al-Aqsa Mosque?
Well, Palestinians know very well that it's because we are speaking about Palestinians and Muslims, then the world and the international community will not move because several crimes and massacres had been carried out by the Israeli regime and the settlers in the past, and the international community just sent condemnations and slammed the Israeli regime aggression and violence, but on ground nothing was carried out. So this time Palestinians would not be surprised when the international community will not be doing will be doing nothing for this act by the Israeli settlers and the Israeli regime. That's why Palestinians are saying today they don't want to hear more condemnations. What they really want is actions on ground. They want the international community to move, to impose sanctions on the Israeli regime. Because what's going on, it's not aggression or violence. It's simply crimes and desecration of a Muslim holy site.
Thanks a lot, Mona Kandil, joining us from Ramallah. Palestinian resistance movements have warned Israel against allowing flocks of settlers to storm Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds. Hamas said Israel would be held accountable as it is playing with fire and dragging the region into the escalation. The group urged Palestinians to stop settlers from any act of aggression and vandalism at Al-Aqsa. Separately, the Islamic Jihad movement said the call for settlers to send to Al-Aqsa is equivalent to declaring a war against Palestinians and their sacred values. The warnings come after some right-wing Israeli groups called on settlers to assemble at the mosque compound on Thursday. In recent weeks, the regime has intensified its violent attacks on Palestinians across the occupied West Bank, including Muslim worshippers at Al-Aqsa. Moving on, reports indicate that intelligence provided by the United States has helped the Ukrainian military target Russian generals during the Ukraine war. Nearly a dozen Russian generals have been killed since the war began on February 24th. That's according to the New York Times, citing multiple senior U.S. officials. The Daily says many of those generals were targeted with the help of U.S. intelligence. The report says other Western intelligence services also provided assistance in that regard. The U.S. National Security Council has denounced the claim as irresponsible. It said the U.S. only provides battlefield intelligence to help the Ukrainians defend their country. Western officials have attributed the Russian generals' deaths to low morale, as well as potential communications and logistics issues. A three-day ceasefire in the Russian-held city of Mariupol, southern Ukraine, has come into effect. The truce began at 500 GMT on Thursday. It was announced by Russia a day earlier. A humanitarian corridor is also opened to evacuate civilians from the site of the Azovstal steel plant. Mariupol officials have said some 100,000 people were holed up at the facility. Moscow says civilians sheltering there are allowed to travel to Russia or Ukraine-controlled territory. The plant is the last stronghold of Ukrainian forces in the port city of Mariupol. Russia took control of the city last month. And lawmakers warn of dire social consequences for EU citizens after the European Commission proposes to ban Russian oil imports. The 27-nation EU is already enduring record high inflation and energy prices. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Hundreds of civil servants inside the European Commission are working on a sixth round of sanctions against Moscow over the conflict in Ukraine. More Russian individuals, banks and media outlets are being targeted. There is also a proposal to completely stop the importation of Russian oil into the 27-country EU. Legislators say the measures will not only hurt Russia.
They will also affect the lives of European citizens with a direct impact on their homes, their jobs, their wallets.
A debate on Wednesday in the European Parliament heard that inflation in the EU is eating up wages and pensions. Apparently, 36 million people in the bloc are unable to sufficiently heat their homes.
We should not talk about energy poverty anymore. We are talking about actual poverty. People who cannot pay their bills anymore. And therefore, my proposal is to organise a social summit.
The new social crisis and Ukrainian refugee crisis are placing additional pressures on EU health systems, including mental health services. Those working in the sector say there is not enough financial support from governments.
I have a lot of colleagues, they are leaving, they don't want to work as a nurse anymore because the pressure is too high. And because if you have a lot of people inside the houses that cannot pay the rent, they cannot afford to pay food, they cannot pay the gas and electricity, of course they are going to have mental issues.
Pope Francis says NATO's, quote, barking at Russia's door may have caused the conflict in Ukraine. Some EU lawmakers agree and suggest Washington is mostly to blame.
The US needs the war to reinforce the unipolar power, while Ukraine, the people of Europe, and hundreds of millions in the global south will pay the price.
The European Commission's latest sanctions on Russia are presently just proposals.
Ban all Russian oil.
Hungary and Slovakia look set to veto the oil ban. There is growing concern surrounding how the Kremlin might respond to such a ban.
That's because Russia's gas is even more important to the EU's economy than its oil. Economists say if Moscow was to switch off the gas immediately, it would be game over for the European Union. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Welcome back. The U.S. Navy says it has allowed over 200 sailors to leave the USS George Washington aircraft carrier after multiple deaths by suicide among the crew. The sailors were moved to a naval facility while the aircraft carrier was on its way to Virginia for refueling and overhaul process. The move followed reported suicides on board, including three in April alone. It has prompted the Navy to launch a probe. Last year, the U.S. president announced a new plan to clamp down the risk of suicides among service members and veterans. The plan included a focus on improving safety by limiting their access to objects that could be used to cause self-harm. Pentagon statistics show 19 out of every 100,000 sailors died by suicide in 2020. The U.S. Army had the highest suicide rate at about 36 per 100,000 the same year. Severe storms and tornadoes have swept across the U.S. state of Oklahoma, causing widespread damage. Seminole County, about 80 kilometers southeast of Oklahoma City, is the hardest hit. Some structures were completely flattened there and streets littered with debris. There were also reports of people being trapped before crews managed to get them out. No injuries have been reported. More than 14,000 customers have been left without power across Oklahoma. The storms are part of a severe weather system expected to hit Texas as well. Polls have opened across the UK in local and regional elections. Voters in England, Wales and Scotland will pick who they want to run services that affect everyday life in their local areas. People in Northern Ireland will choose their government. Our correspondent in London, Saeed Puraza, tells us more.
We're at a polling station in West London, in Ealing, a district in West London. You can see the occasional early riser go in and cast their ballots. And they do so with one important question in mind, as you said earlier, who best represents them at the local level, who has the best plan, for example, in terms of waste management, the maintenance of roads, the state of roads, access to local hospitals and libraries. But this time around, they have other questions in mind, issues that have dominated the national conversation over the past year. For example, the Partygate scandal that is beset the government of Prime Minister Boris Johnson over the past year, as well as tax hikes recently as last month, and also the rising cost of living. There has been a survey in the run-up to this election predicting that the Conservative Party might stand to lose as many as 550 seats in the local councils across England. If that prediction comes to pass, comes to have been right, then we might see, again, these are predictions, some kind of a coup on the part of members of the Conservative Party, and that might spell the end for Prime Minister Johnson.
Iran's ambassador to the United Nations has raised the alarm about the negative impact of unilateral sanctions on ordinary people of target countries. Majid Tahrir Avanchi made the remarks in an address to the UN General Assembly's Committee on Information. Iran's envoy said unilateral sanctions prevent access to essential medical supplies by limiting access to foreign financial resources. He added that such measures are against principles of international humanitarian law and the UN Charter. Tahrir Avanchi said unilateral sanctions weaken economic growth of target countries, causing great problems for them. Several countries, including Iran, have been hit by U.S. Unilateral sanctions even during the COVID-19 pandemic. Prominent international rights groups say the sanctions deprive Iranian patients of life-saving medicines. Iran's foreign minister slams the detention and trial of an Iranian citizen in Sweden over alleged rights abuses. Hossein Amir Abdullahian, in a phone call with his Swedish counterpart, Ann Lind, called Hamid Nouri's detention illegal and demanded his immediate release. Nouri was arrested in 2019 on charges leveled against him by the anti-Iran terror group MKO. Swedish prosecutors have requested a life imprisonment for Nouri over alleged human rights violations. Back in the 1980s, Hamid Nouri's family has told Press TV that he's been humiliated, beaten, and denied access to medical services during his detention and trial period. The MKO grouplet is responsible for a large number of deadly terror attacks against Iranian people and officials over the last four decades. Political commentator David Yavobian says Sweden has a track record of working in line with the U.S. interests.
This, Daniel, is just a classic show trial. And unfortunately, the Swedish judicial system has been effectively weaponized by the United States and the UK to serve the interests of American and British imperialism. And I don't think that it's any coincidence, even though the cases are unrelated, that within 10 days of the arrest of Hamid Nouri, the Swedish government announced the end of its bogus rape case against Julian Assange, its work in the interests of American and British imperialism done in regards to Julian Assange. And then, of course, in the context of what was going on in late 2019, that is, the maximum application of Trump administration maximum pressure and the Trump administration turning to all sorts of illegal, underhanded, and cowardly dealings, such as within just a month and a half, then the cowardly assassination of General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes in Baghdad. So it's a show trial. It's absurd, even the origins of this case having come directly from the brain and office of the terrorist cult leader Meriem Rajavi in Tirana, serving the interests again of none other than CIA, the Mossad, and the overall goals of British and American imperialism.
Well, that's it with the world news for now. Do stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
In the United States, members of Congress involved in an attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election have refused to testify voluntarily before June's public hearings. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian columnist Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, "Capital Attack Panel Set to Subpoena Trump Allies," Republican Kinzinger says. The House committee investigating the 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol will decide in the next week or two whether to issue subpoenas trying to force Republican lawmakers to testify about Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election. One of two Republicans on the House panel said on Sunday, 1st of May. "If that takes a subpoena, it takes a subpoena," Adam Kinzinger, one of the Republicans on the House panel, said. The Illinois congressman also told CBS's Face the Nation program that public hearings planned for June will aim to lay the whole story out in front of the American people, because ultimately they have to be the judge of Donald Trump's attempt to hold on to power. Adam Kinzinger and nine other House Republicans voted to impeach Donald Trump over the Capitol attack, which a bipartisan Senate committee linked to seven deaths. But Senate Republicans stayed loyal, acquitting Donald Trump, and Adam Kinzinger is one of four anti-Trump House Republicans who have since announced their retirement. Kinzinger and Liz Cheney of Wyoming are the only Republicans on the 6th of January House panel. The June hearings, Adam Kinzinger said, will involve laying out what led to 6th of January, the lies after the election, fundraising, the 187 minutes the president basically sat in the Oval Office as the Capitol was attacked, and the response by the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon. "It's important for us to be able to put that in front of the American people, because ultimately they have to be the judge." The U.S. Department of Justice will make decisions based on information, but the American people have to take the work we've done and decide what they want to do with it or what they want to believe. Majorities of Republicans in Congress and in public opinion polls believe or choose to support and repeat Donald Trump's lie that Joe Biden stole the presidency via electoral fraud. Prominent Trump supporters in Congress who have advanced that lie and were involved in attempts to overturn the election before 6th of January have refused to speak to the House committee. "I won't say who I think we need to talk to yet," Adam Kinzinger said. "I mean, I think everybody needs to come and talk to us. We've requested information from various members. In terms of whether we move forward with a subpoena, it's going to be both a strategic tactical decision and a question of whether or not we can do that and get the information in time. Decisions we make every day." Adam Kinzinger added, "I think ultimately, whatever we can do to get that information, I think if that takes a subpoena, it takes a subpoena. But I think that the key is, regardless of even what some members of Congress are going to tell us, we know a lot of information. We're going deeper with richer and more detail to show the American people." Adam Kinzinger said he would love to see Mike Pence, Donald Trump's Donald Trump's vice president, who ultimately refused to reject Electoral College results on 6th of January 2021, testify before the House committee. Adam Kinzinger added, "I hope he would do so voluntarily. These are decisions I think that we're going to end up making from a tactical perspective in the next week or two, because we basically pinned down what this hearing schedule is going to look like, the content. And as we go into the full narrative of this thing, I would hope and think that the Vice President, Mike Pence, would want to come in and tell this story, because he did do the right thing on that day. If he doesn't, we have to look at the options we have available to us if there's information we don't already have." Meanwhile, a lawyer for Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, a far-right Republican congresswoman shown in court filings by the committee to have been in contact with the White House around 6th of January 2021, has claimed she was in fact a victim of the riot. "I'd love to ask her a few questions," Adam Kinzinger said. "We know some things. I won't confirm or deny the text messages, of course, but let me just say this. For Marjorie Taylor Greene to say she's a victim of the 6th of January riot, it's amazing. I mean, she assaulted, I think, a survivor from a school shooting at some point in Washington, D.C. She stood outside a congresswoman's office and yelled through a mail slot and said Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was too scared to come out and confront her. And then, when Marjorie Taylor Greene is confronted, she's all of a sudden a victim and a poor, helpless congresswoman that's just trying to do a job. That's insane. We want the information."
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It appears the U.S. does not need to hide its intentions behind the war in Ukraine. Military sales, for example, are one major incentive for the U.S. The U.S. President Joe Biden has praised Lockheed Martin for making Javelin missiles in a visit to the plant that produces them. The U.S. push behind applauding military manufacturers of keeping up with weapons orders for Ukraine comes as casualties are mounting in Ukraine, economies are unraveling, and the world is edging closer to World War III. Let me first introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Joining us is Arnold August, an author and journalist from Montreal. Also joining us is Daniel Lazar, who's a journalist and author, who joins us from New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both. Arnold August, I'll start with you. The U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday visited this Lockheed Martin company. The ticker symbol is LMT.N, just so we can relate that to the topic of our program. It manufactures the anti-tank Javelin missile, and filming that took place there, he was applauding the factory workers and the company for keeping up with the orders there. Now, this is kind of reminiscent of what Trump was doing, if you remember, in that scene in the White House, I forget which room, with Mohammed bin Salman, with the placards saying thank you and the orders and, you know, all that show that he put on there, which made lots of money for the U.S. What does that show to you when you have the U.S. president visiting this plant and applauding the plant workers and the company itself?
Well, I think the first thing is that the United States has apparently put aside any pretense that the war in Ukraine against Russia is for anything like for democracy or whatever. And they cannot even hide the fact that those who are calling the shots are the weapons manufacturers. For example, Austin, Secretary of Defense Austin, at one point joined the main partner of Lockheed, which is Raytheon, who together are producing this very dangerous missile. Now, when one goes on to their website of this company that Biden visited yesterday, they sell these javelins like Americans may say sell ice cream. We have the best ice cream. We have the best hot dogs. It's so cynical. Allow me to share with you and the listeners just a couple of sentences from that company selling their product. The world's premier shoulder-to-shoulder fired anti-armor system, Javelin, takes the fight to the enemy. Javelin automatically guides itself to the target after launch, allowing the gunner to take cover and avoid counterfire. Soldiers or Marines can reposition themselves immediately after firing or reload to engage another threat. Using an arch top attack profile, Javelin climbs above its target for improved visibility and then strikes where the armor is weakened. I mean, you know, it's a very dangerous weapon. And it could cause a lot of harm to the Russian forces and contribute substantially to increase the conflict and bringing the forces even farther away from any negotiated settlement. In any case, they don't seem to be interested at all in negotiating a negotiated settlement.
No, not at all. And Daniel Lazar, as a matter of fact, it is said that... Biden is using this visit to press Congress to approve what he is now proposing, which is just $33 billion for assisting Ukraine militarily, including more than the $20 billion in military aid. So far, $4 billion or more to have been allocated to Ukraine. I mean, when you take a step back at the way that this is coming consecutively in the past, I think 2 to 3 weeks max. What do you think, Daniel Lazar? What is the U.S. doing here?
Well, there's no doubt that a lot of arms manufacturers are making a lot of money off these weapons. They are having a wonderful time as they rake in the profits and work overtime to turn these weapons out. But there's something interesting going on here because the U.S. is actually having trouble making up for all the weapons that the Ukrainians are running through on the battlefield. So there apparently are are firing these missiles like mad. It's not clear how many, what effect they're having, and reports from the battlefield are actually somewhat mixed concerning their effectiveness. But the U.S. is pulling out all stops. It's revving up its factory lines. It is putting money in the hands of arms makers and urging them to do everything they can to keep these weapons flowing. But it shows that the U.S. Is determined to win this war. It is not at all interested in a negotiated settlement. It wants to win. It wants to drive Russia out of the Ukraine and probably out of the Crimean Peninsula and the Donbass republics as well. So the U.S. is striving for a maximum victory here, and that will essentially wreak an enormous price in terms of economic damage and the loss of human life.
Yeah, maybe we briefly, if you can elaborate a little bit more as to what you think the reasons are when you said, Daniel Azar, that they're running out of supplies, that they can't keep up with the amounts that need to be, given to Ukraine. Are they running out of supplies based on the fact that what they're providing, which is so much, is not working against Russia, that Russia is putting up a good front? Is that what you mean, Daniel Azar, or what's really happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reviews from the battlefield are actually kind of mixed as to how effective these weapons are, and the Western press, sings the praises of the Ukrainian military, saying that it's winning one battle after the other, but in fact, in the same breath, it points out that the Russians are pressing a 300-mile wide offensive against the Ukrainians, and that takes a lot of firepower. So apparently the Ukrainians are having a good deal of trouble in coping with that offensive. And they're running through munitions like crazy, and the U.S. is doing everything it can to supply them with the weapons they need. But it's clear the war is not going quite as smoothly as the Western media says it is, and that the Russian steamroller is forging ahead.
Arnold August, thank you so much for the information that you gave to us about the way that these Javelin works. Now, when Biden actually came out and said this fight is not going to be cheap, and that they are working hard to become the biggest producer of semiconductor chips that are needed for these Javelin missiles, and many other high-technology goods. Now, I'm curious as to whether he's using the fact that the U.S. is running low on semiconductor chips, that war is good, so therefore we need equipment, so therefore we need to produce these chips. Is that what he's saying? I mean, he could maybe use another product. I'm sure it's not just machine guns or Javelin or whatever military equipment that use semiconductor chips.
No, I think that is the implication with regards to Biden's statement. So, of course, this opens up another sector of the American economy in addition to the open arms production, and that is the, Silicon Valley type of activity with these chips. And I think it's just to substantiate what was said previously, that another indication that the United States is far from strong and far from actually winning the war is while Biden was making this announcement for increased Javelin production and shipments to Ukraine, you have another important actor, Israel, openly saying yesterday that they are going to increase their military help to the Zelensky government, as well as for arms and even soldiers. Now, for the United States to get involved openly with Israel in this conflict, that means I think they're dangerous because they are taking a chance. This thing could have effect in the Middle East as well, where Iran has made it very clear that they will not accept Israeli aggression. They will not accept, and also Russia has said to Israel, you better stay out of Ukraine. But, you know, this is dangerous for the United States. I think the United States is desperate, so they have to pull that that last-ditch effort to try to get Israel involved. And that could also have important repercussions amongst other countries in the West who probably would not like to see Israel involved in Ukraine, because Israel is known as an apartheid state, as a fascist state. So by their participation in this war alongside the Zelensky government, it confirms what the Russians are saying, that it is a, you know, that the Zelensky government is a fascist government that aligns with anyone to oppose Russia. And we should not forget as well the former head of the CIA and the former Secretary of Defense, Panella. He openly said in a TV interview with the liberal CNN that our goal, United States, American goal, is to kill as many Russians as possible. That's not me saying it. That he is saying it. So this thing is, you know, is bound to accelerate, and it's obvious that United States are not interested in negotiated settlement. They are only interested in weakening Russia and trying to defeat Russia. But I think their goal, they will be very disappointed in the coming weeks and months.
Sure. Well, just to add to what you said, Daniel Azar, is the fact that the U.S. actually has provided Ukraine with 10 of these anti-tank missiles per each tank. So 10 times the amount to make sure that gets rid of Russian tanks. Now, what's interesting over here when you take a look at just the military aspect of this, Daniel Azar, is the meeting that was held in Germany just days ago, I believe, where it was by invitation of the U.S., or 40 countries were invited. And basically, this was, again, trying to get a pledge from these countries to assist Ukraine militarily. And what's interesting about this is the fact that, correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel Azar, doesn't the U.S. actually provide most NATO countries with their military equipment? And therefore, it's asking them to either help out or purchase new ones. And before I ask you for your reaction, this is what the Lockheed Raytheon spokesperson, which is this joint venture between the two for the Javelin, said: we are exploring options to more quickly replenish U.S. inventories and backfill depleted stocks of allies and partners. So it kind of points to the fact that the U.S. wins no matter what here.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. is going to the U.S. arms manufacturers are making a lot of money, and the U.S. dominance in terms of weaponry will be more and more established as a consequence of this war. But, you know, I just wouldn't reduce it to a simple question of profits. I mean, what's important is empire. And essentially, Biden can't afford to lose this war. Because if he loses this war, essentially it'll be the Afghan debacle multiplied by 100. The U.S. will be so profoundly shaken that the American empire will be shaken to its core around the world. So the U.S. is in a fight for its life, just as Russia's in a fight for its life. And therefore, Biden is pulling out all stops. He's got everything riding on victory, and he is determined to prevail on the battlefield and in the process to overthrow Putin, to essentially cripple Russia, and then, as Liz Truss just pointed out in London, to establish a kind of a worldwide, you know, global NATO that will humble China as well. So those are the U.S. goals.
Well, I mean, if that is the case, which all fingers are pointing to that direction, Arnold August, when was the last time the U.S. actually did win a war? Did it win in Syria? Did it win in Afghanistan? I mean, when was the last time that it did?
Well, the last time was the Second World War. But it was the Soviet Union, ironically, that won it for the United States. Since then, they've lost everything. They lost all the wars. And, you know, the situation in Ukraine, their goal now is to weaken Russia, right, as part of the overall attempt to establish a domination against the growing Russia-Chinese alliance. But that goal is not just like since February 24th. That goal started in several years ago when NATO, under the direction and the leadership of the United States and their close allies such as Canada, provoked
Russia, went up to Russia's border. Even the Pope had to admit that yesterday, half-heartedly, that perhaps it was NATO that provoked Russia. So that the goal that they're seeking now, domination, actually was the same goal that provoked NATO's aggressiveness against Russia starting in the coup, the Maidan coup in 2014. So it's a continuation of the same goal, United States. But now what is different now compared to before 2014 is that the multipolar world is stronger. Like United States can kid themselves by saying, oh, we, the international community. But what is the international community that is supporting their action against Russia? It's basically the Europe and North America. If you look at all of the global south, the vast majority, almost all of the countries, either do not refuse to denounce a Russian invasion or are also against the U.S. policy of sanctions against Russia. So they can kid themselves, but the international community is just themselves. And I think by getting Israel more fully and openly involved in Ukraine, How will that go down with even the Arab countries such as Saudi Arabia and other countries all over the South, the global South, who have no interest, no feeling, favorable feeling with regards to Israel? It'll backfire against them, and they'll even have lose more friends in the world aside, of course, from the European and North American core.
So, Daniel Azar, correct me if I'm wrong. If we're sitting, looking at Russia and the officials there, in particular Putin, obviously, and the head of the military, and they're getting squeezed left, right, and center, and with the fact now that you have Israel reported to have fighters there on the ground, also the fact that you're having the U.S., which I'm sure, if you agree, has special operatives on the ground in Ukraine. Recent reports saying that it's training people in Germany, Ukrainians in Germany. We're looking at Russia, that's a nuclear-powered nation that has more nuclear bombs than the U.S. Isn't that, I don't want to say playing with a lion's tail, but is that getting too dangerous here?
It's playing with fire. Nuclear fire. It's extraordinarily dangerous. The U.S.'s military record, as you point out, is extremely poor. The U.S. has lost every major war it's been involved in since World War II. And in that case, it was the Soviets who really won the war, not the Americans. But this is a war America has to win. If it loses, then not only America loses, but the American empire loses.
What would a win look like, though, for America? What would it look like?
Well, America wants to see, at the very least, see Russia expelled from all of the Ukraine, and probably the Crimea and the Donbass republics as well. It wants to see Russia make restitution. It wants to see Putin overthrown. It wants to see Russia itself shrunk and crippled. And it wants to see China get down on its knees and apologize and to promise to be a good boy forevermore. But certainly the U.S. wants the invasion rolled back. And if it doesn't succeed in that, then the U.S. empire is in big trouble. So we are really facing an epic moment in global history where this amazing empire, which by the 1990s had virtually conquered the globe, is now facing a crucial test. A test it must and it must prevail. If it doesn't prevail, then the whole U.S. global order is going to be in big trouble.
Well, as our guest there, Daniel Azar, mentioned Arnold August, and I heard him mention China on a number of occasions. That's the next stop for the U.S. I mean, you know, if we're looking at what's happening in Ukraine, that could be a walk in the park compared to what we're going to see in China. If the U.S. is going to pursue the same avenue, or does that depend on the ticker on the stock market and to see how much money they've made, and maybe they say, okay, we've made enough money, so China is not going to be as severe. I mean, are we looking at U.S. really using the same approach towards China?
Well, I would go a bit farther and say that what the United States is doing in Russia, and let us make no mistake about it, their main goal in Russia is regime change in Moscow, to try to have a government there that is in favor or ready to ally with the United States. Now, not only China is the next step, but in my view, the attempt, the American provocation, NATO provocation against Russia on its borders since 2014 is part of their overall goal, which their main principal goal is opposing China. They want to see China weaken. They want to desperately try and keep China from increasing its economic influence, increasing even its moral influence, its example. Because after all, you know, of course, Russia is not a socialist country, we agree, okay? But China is, and it's quite well known amongst the world population increasingly, especially in third world countries, that Russia has developed so much in terms of, for example, bringing millions of people, hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. Education is free there. Health is free there. They have advanced so much. And United States, that is what is threatening the United States. And I think it goes all the way back to Obama when he started that policy of the pivot against China. At least Obama foresaw that. He knew that China was coming. It was increasing its influence, economic, political, and moral influence in the world. And the United States should concentrate on China. And the conflict now in Russia, against Russia, is part of the overall main goal of American pivot against China.
All right. And finally, Daniel Lazar, we're looking at the UK that's rationing cooking oil. We're looking at the IMF that sent out a warning saying in Africa there's going to be civil unrest, social disorder, because of what's happening with the food situation. We're looking at energy shortages around the world. The U.S. itself has recorded a 1 2/10% contraction, which many are saying signals a recession. And I could keep this going for another half hour probably, but we don't have the time. Is it worth it?
Well, I mean, first of all, the U.S. provoked this war, number one, which is extremely foolish from an imperial point of view. But the U.S. Just can't tolerate. It can't tolerate the Russian presence.
Right.
It can't tolerate having a rival, that challenges its global power. Therefore, the U.S. feels it is worth it, and is determined to pursue this war to the bitter end.
Thank you, Daniel. Sorry to jump in. Journalist and author Arnold August, thank you so much. Author and journalist from Montreal. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tatway, it's goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Back to Reality. I have the honor and privilege of being joined by my brothers in faith and humanity. To the right, I have the one and only brother Habib. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me here. It's always an honor and a pleasure. And to my right,
assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And thank you for having me, Abdullah Al-Musawi.
Brother Habib, at your service. I'm studying in the Hausa. I've been studying for 10 years, Mashallah. Which is a long time for,
it is,
to some
to
extent.
To be studying anything, really.
Yeah, and...
And Brother Abdullah?
Well, I am in the same boat as Brother Habib. We kind of started together in Hausa. Maybe he was like a year before me.
I was a year before you.
Yeah. So we both students of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Brother Habib, would you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
I like to go outside. Depending on the people, the community that I sit down with, the gatherings are very important.
Oh, so you pick and choose.
Yeah,
you don't socialize for the sake of socializing.
That's the advice of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, اختر المجالس لعينك.
Oh, which means?
Which means pretty much choose carefully the assemblies or the gatherings that you sit in and that you are in. And pretty much it's very important. Time wasting comes up to mind. The remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the sins that might come up.
Through speech.
Yeah, like really, the devil could be a human being, right? And they just want to make problems. They just want to waste your time. They just want to, you know, see people fall into problems. That's how they're good. They're sick. Anyways, yes, I do socialize, but I socialize with, you know, a specific circle.
Mm.
And usually the socialize benefits me either in the hereafter, my lessons, or money.
Given the fact that you've just stated you're very mindful of the quality of your socializing, is it safe to say that there are times you prefer your own company over others?
Of course. Every
there are times that you choose to be alone.
Every human being needs time alone, even from the wife, even from the children. I know some people who are blessed in some situations. There are times where you just need to sit down between you and yourself.
Mm.
You know, and the other day, when I first got married, my wife used to always tell me, why are you sitting down? What are you thinking about? Tell her nothing.
She said, really?
What do you
is
mean
nothing?
Seriously, nothing. Just sitting down, just like, leave me alone.
Blank.
Just leave me alone. And then one day she was very busy with, I don't know, with the children. She had a dentist appointment. She had.